Tweet at TodaySOR.
Yesterday, we broadcast an interview with Karen and Peter Robinson, whose 14-year-old son, Ben, died from second impact syndrome while playing rugby for his school in 2011. So to what extent is the world of rugby dealing with concussion, especially among younger players? Also a question that applies very much in Gaelic games, particularly Gaelic football as well. I'm joined on the line now from Manchester by Dr. Barry O'Driscoll, a former International Rugby Board medical advisor, and also from Ballina by the Mayo team doctor, senior team doctor in Gaelic football, Dr. Sean Moffat. Thank you both indeed for joining us. First of all, Barry O'Driscoll, to you, you have been concerned about the performance or the safety measures, or maybe lack of them as you would see it, in the case of the rugby authorities. But surely the case of Ben Robinson was a big wake-up call, and it did prompt the rugby authorities to act.
Yes, it certainly did, that amongst other events which took place, but it was a big moving point for them. And I must say that Peter and Karen's interview yesterday was extremely moving, and they have done a huge amount to bring it to the attention of the whole of the sporting world, and having suffered that tragedy, still had time to try and effect improvements for everybody else. But it's that, plus of course what happened in America with the NFL and a major research that's been done, and a recent appreciation that we know does not just short-term but medium and long-term effects, potentially disastrous effects on somebody who has repeated minor brain injury. And we're talking about an injured brain here, and this is what has concentrated the mind on it.
You were a medical advisor with the International Rugby Board, but you resigned because of the 5-minute rule. Now just explain to us how that 5-minute rule operates.
Well, basically, very briefly, prior to the 5-minute rule, we had a 3-week rule, which I was part of the IRB when we brought in that 3-week rule. We knew very little about concussion, but anybody who's shown a sign or symptom of concussion, because we knew so little about it, but obviously it wasn't very good for the body, had to be off for 3 weeks unless they saw a neurologist. And then out of the blue, two and a half years ago, they all brought in a pitch side assessment of 5 minutes on somebody who'd shown signs and symptoms, and they could go back in 5 minutes. Now, just common sense tells you that to go from 3 weeks to 5 minutes is not in the interests of the player, and subsequently we've seen that it hugely isn't in the incidence of the player. It's been a bit disastrous. We've seen patently concussed players going back on and then having to come back again. No medical or scientific expert can clear somebody of concussion in 5 minutes.
But is it not possible maybe over a longer period, 10 or 15, if there's that amount of time left in a match for a proper assessment to be made and for a player to be allowed to resume?
I personally don't think so. In my experience playing in rugby, the number of players who later on that night developed severe headaches and vomiting and symptoms rules that out for a start. Nobody else in the world uses a 5 or 10 minute. I know in the NFL and the AFL in Australia, they use a 20-minute assessment, but the sort of efficiency of that is now being thrown into doubt, because there are long term symptoms coming out. You can't do it in 5 minutes or 10 minutes, and I feel you can't do it in 20. The only safe thing, you keep them off until you're sure later on that they're okay.
Now, as I say as well, we have Dr. Sean Moffat, Mayo team doctor. Good morning to you, Sean Moffat.
Good morning, Sean. Thank you.
And thank you for coming on the programme. I gather you also heard the interview with Karen and Peter Robinson yesterday. And I think it's fair to say, though, that the GAA, for its part, has been fairly concerned with the whole concussion issue up to now.
Yeah, I would think so. I actually attended a conference that Barry was at back in Zurich a number of years ago when I was on the Medical and Scientific and Player Welfare Committee. As far back as 2007, it was clear that concussion in sport was becoming a big concern in the sporting journals worldwide. So from 2007, we set about reviewing all the best medical information regarding concussion and getting together a protocol and a consensus statement for our team doctors and for our players and coaches. But regarding concussion.
Yeah, in the heat of battle, whether it's a juvenile match or an under 16 match or a minor match or a senior match, and we'll come on to talk about what happened in Limerick last Saturday, there must be huge pressure, though, on a medic, both from the players themselves, maybe from the supporters and the team management, to get guys back on the pitch.
Sean, it's not something I have experienced. I suppose the biggest thing about concussion, and Barry would agree, it's actually detecting it. It's a very difficult injury to detect, especially in a game where we don't have the benefit of action replays and slow motion. So I think, as Barry said, the key thing is if you have a suspicion at all that there may have been a concussion, either because of a clash of heads or heavy fall or heavy shoulder, your duty of care is to take the player off. And again, I suppose the key thing with the GA in the last number of years is just raising awareness about concussion. I think even amongst coaches, players, and team doctors, you know, from the early 2000s, there just wasn't an awareness about concussion and the subtleties regarding concussion.
There is a test, I think it's called the SCAT-3 now. That's mentioned in the GA's own guidelines that you worked on with, I think, the experts in the Beacon Hospital. Explain what SCAT-3 is all about, if you would, please.
Well, SCAT is a sports concussion assessment tool. So, you know, it's basically a document which outlines the signs and symptoms of concussion, which can be subtle, which can, you know, vary from balance symptoms to feeling your vision is blurred, light, noise sensitivity, feeling foggy, all the way up to symptoms such as headache, blurred vision. And so it's a tool that outlines the signs and symptoms, and it outlines various tests that can be done. But the key thing in that tool is that if you suspect concussion, you take the player off and they do not return to the field of play.
And how much time do you need to make that kind of assessment? We heard from Barry that 5 minutes just is not enough.
I would agree with Barry. I think if you suspect concussion, the player comes off and doesn't return, because even in my experience, you know, players often do not exhibit full signs and symptoms for many hours later. So I think if there's been a heavy collision, a heavy shoulder, where the player is obviously slightly dazed on the pitch, or if you have any suspicions, you take them off and they don't return to the field.
Yeah, just on that point, Sean, because as you well know, I think during last Saturday's match, that epic semi-final replay between Mayo, your own county, and Kerry, and since then there's been a lot of speculation about the sequence of events from the time that Aidan O'Shea and Killian O'Connor, two Mayo stars and heroes, they had that, it was a pretty brutal accidental collision. And let's just have a listen to RT's commentary from Saturday with Marty Morrissey and then Tom Carr.
And certainly Mayo could do with Aidan O'Shea around the middle of the field right now.
Yeah, I know that feeling. A player trying to plead his case to go on the pitch. As a manager, you know in your heart and soul he's not in a position to. And the medical advice is don't.
Well, Aidan wants to come on, but I think the Mayo management are reluctant. The medical team have obviously advised not to bring in Aidan O'Shea.
What's going on?
And here he comes.
They're bringing it.
Nicky Conroy comes off. Aidan O'Shea is back on the field.
Now, that's the commentary, as we heard it. That's just an extract from the second half. Sean Moffat, you were there. You were in that cauldron. What actually happened?
Well, I suppose, you know, I would have got the players' permission to talk about this because it's widely in the media. What happened in that instance is the players sustained nasty facial injuries that required complicated suturing in the dressing room. And you know, it took up the full length of time in the dressing room to get that job done. But being aware that there was a clash of heads, I wasn't happy to let either player back out until there was a period of observation. And again, what Barry would agree with there is oftentimes you need to kind of exert the players. They need to do warm-up or some degree of exercise to make sure that there isn't any signs or symptoms of concussion. So basically, you know, when we the patients sutured and brought to the sideline, with our physio team, both players went under a period of observation. Then they had a modified warm-up, and only when I was satisfied that there was no concussion when they were let back. So the initial injury was facial injuries that needed laceration. I took time to make sure that there was no associated injuries before we let them back. And that's the duty of care that we have to give players.
But clearly you suspected that there might have been a concussion sustained. Now, just the rules themselves would seem to say that if you had that suspicion, that should have been the end of it.
Well, it's not that I had a suspicion, but I was, you know, we don't have the benefit of, you know, seeing that injury in slow motion. All I knew that the players had sustained a bang. So I took my time, and I took my time to see, was there any signs or symptoms of concussion? Obviously, when a player sustains a nasty head laceration, there's a degree of force. So I was happy after, I think it was 7 or 8 minutes for Killian, that he was fine, that there was no signs or symptoms of concussion, including balance testing, which is outlined in the SCAT score, to let him back. And we took a few more minutes with Aidan. And when the tests were run, and I was happy that there was no signs or symptoms of concussion, he returned to the field of play.
And there was no issue of safety or health and safety with either of those players?
Well, the health and safety of the player was the primary reason that the decision to delay get them back on the field.
Sure.
And again, there was no issue from management with that. It was absolutely a medical decision.
And you obviously applied your medical judgment, your expertise, but, you know, in a metaphorical sense, I suppose, you had a kind of a Mayo jersey on your back. And did you? Is it possible
to separate those two
things and to stand back and take the cold decision?
This is the thing there, if you are, and Barry would agree, if you are a sports and exercise physician and you've done the higher training, no matter what's happening in the game, you have to separate yourself from the emotions of the game. These were two players under my care that I would have been acutely aware of concussion, sports concussion, that if I felt I let them back on the pitch when they were in a vulnerable position for a second impact, I was putting their health and safety at risk. So you must separate yourself from the emotions of the game. And really, it was a facial injury, but with my knowledge of concussion, I had to satisfy myself that there wasn't any other injury.
Yeah, and from the commentary there, and also people I think who were at the game would have said that Aidan O'Shea was pressing his case with James Horan for a long time before he came back in. But would that really have been to do with tactics?
I think, you know, once the time was clear that he was fit to play, I think there may have been some delay with getting him actually on the field. That was a secondary issue. I mean, the medical issue is paramount. And in fairness to James and all through his 4 years, medical matters were number one. There was no pressure on me to speed up the recovery or anything like that, but we went through a scientific process with our physio team on the clock, running various tests with both players before I was happy to let them back to the pitch. And I would be acutely aware that, you know, this is a live game on television. And
people would have been shocked by the... Again, you didn't have the benefit of seeing it. I don't know if you've had the chance to look at it since, but it was, particularly in O'Shea's case, it was quite a forceful clash.
Yes, yeah, it was, and there were quite nasty injuries that required laceration. So, I mean, in that circumstances, additional time had to be taken medically to fully assess both players, both in the dressing room and on the sideline.
And Barry O'Driscoll... I know you're an uncle of Brian O'Driscoll, a great hero, a great warrior, but I suppose it was Mayo's good fortune that they did have somebody as experienced and familiar with the concussion issue on the sideline in that instance. But what is your sense as to the capacity of the medical experts to be assertive when they need to be so?
It varies tremendously, I think. As Sean said, we go back a long way, and I know just how expert and experienced a sports physician Sean is, but I'm afraid there are doctors who are not nearly as experienced making these kind of decisions, and the pressure on some of them is huge because they may be full-time, it's their job, they've got coaches shouting at them. And if you take the example of Fritz, the French player last year, who came off in a terribly concussed state, and then they videoed inside as he was being stitched up, they videoed the coach shouting at the doctor and shouting at the player, and eventually he came back on, but not for long. So the whole thing is so subjective. I think it's what Sean said about he saw a facial injury. There were no signs or symptoms at any stage of concussion. And he kept the player and went through the various things. And he was a very, very experienced. And of course, someone who wouldn't be swayed by a coach, that was absolutely fine. But to guarantee or even hope that that will apply across the board, I think is a worry.
On that point, Sean Moffat, again, this is an issue that you're very familiar with. What about the level of penetration into youth teams and schools and clubs? It's one thing for the county team to have an expert like you on hand, but what about down the food chain?
Well, as I said, it's all about awareness. And I think from my time with the GA and from even looking at their website this morning and from knowing posters that have been sent out to us for our dressing room, from our waiting room, I think the message is getting home. There has been campaigns about awareness about concussion. There has been posters and information for every club. Even looking at the website there now, they have, you know, video, YouTube videos with players and coaches, you know, outline their experience of concussion. So I think there's been a sustained awareness campaign. And yesterday's show, the bravery shown by both parents and shows like today raises awareness further. From the GA's perspective, I think one thing that I have found as a team doctor, we have the blood sub rule, which allows me to take off players to assess them, deal with them. There is as yet no such mechanism for a head injury. I know it's controversial, but it would raise awareness further that if there was a heavy clash or collision, that there is an allowance to bring players off the field of play without negatively impacting on that team. It's a controversial area, but it might help or raise awareness further.
Do you think, is there resistance within the association to make the change that you would favour?
Well, it's not resistance, but as Barry says, it could create a complication where players are brought off, assessed, if you haven't all the skills to assess and let back on. So I can see where the association are coming from. But I'd have to say with the GAA, since my time with them and subsequently, there has been sustained efforts, and I do know their concussion guidelines and their awareness protocol was reviewed and a new draft protocol was released earlier this year.
Barry, we had a lot of reaction from parents, obviously, to the conversation I had with the Robinsons. Now, short of banning rugby, and nobody wants to do that, it's a tremendous sport. It does an awful lot for individuals and for teams and their development. But what advice would you have to parents? What are the questions they should be asking if they're not maybe from rugby families or rugby backgrounds? And even if they are, what are the questions you think they should be asking of their clubs, their schools and their coaches?
Well, the questions they should be answering, are just the questions that they should be asking, are the ones that you have asked now, Sean, and they should be prepared to be answered in every single case. We do know that the young brain is slightly more sensitive because of neck muscles and various things to head injuries, and for obvious reasons, much more care should be taken. Secondly, we're learning an awful lot about concussion and concussion in the young, but we still don't know the vast amount about what's going on in the brain, and we've got to be prepared to change. And you see in football where they're suing in America to stop kids heading the ball in between the two penalty areas. We have got to be prepared to assess that all the way along. I personally think that every club, every team, every college, where there is any player where there is a spectrum of concussion, should have a named person, hopefully a doctor, but somebody who knows their concussion backwards, and that person subsequently has to deal with that player, and only when he ticks the box can the player go back. We've got to get consistency. It may take 3 weeks, it may take 3 months, but we've got to get consistency and harmonisation in this, I feel.
Is there a greater urgency at the professional level? And it's still a relatively recent development, I suppose, you know, just over 10 years or thereabouts, that guys are bigger, they're stronger, there's more force, that the hits, as they say, they're so much harder than they were prior to the professional era.
Huge urgency at the professional level. For that reason, when I played, you ran for the gap in rugby. Now you run at the man. You're 2 stone heavier, you're faster, you're fitter, and you run 8 or 10 times to take a man out before somebody goes for the gap. So it is a completely different game played by different types of player. So there is a huge change there. And I think that the message it sent out with this 5-minute rule was terrible for the game, and what we saw on the television from all over the world of blatantly concussed players going back on, and yet at the same time we're trying to get a web message out, which unfortunately very few people read, that you've got to stay off now for full 3 weeks, and yet you can go back on after 5 minutes in the state that it's shown. That's where it is urgent in the professional game. I'm afraid the professional game sets the standards, and we're not setting the standards in rugby at the professional game.
And I suppose finally, Sean Moffat, as people's training in Gaelic games gets all that more intense, and sometimes it's hard to discern whether there's a difference between the level of commitment and training required of amateurs in Gaelic games and other sports. You would presumably echo what we've heard from Barry O'Driscoll.
Absolutely. I think, you know, with the experience and It was a pleasure having Gavin Duffy joining our panel this year. And I think, you know, Gavin would admit that the level of preparation and training and physical fitness in inter-county Gaelic football now is every bit as high as, you know, professional sports. So I think, you know, as Barry said there, you know, the hits are getting hard, the game is faster. So we absolutely need more and more awareness and training for all involved with Gaelic games, from the players, coaches, parents, and from all our team doctors, that there's an acute awareness of management of concussion and taking players off. And also, I suppose, the big thing we didn't discuss is when players can get back playing after sustaining concussion injury.
When it's confirmed, and what's your view on that?
Well, I mean, as the GAA, we've adopted the consensus statement from the various expert panels there that, you know, it is at least a week, but that's a week where players are checked each day. They go through various steps to see, can we provoke any further signs of concussion? And if they're not progressing on daily, they go back the way. So the minimum would be a week, but it can often be a lot longer. And with Gaelic games, we're far more cautious with the younger player where there is a stand-down period for 2 weeks.
Okay, we'll leave it there. Thank you both for joining us. That's Dr. Sean Moffat, the Mayo Gaelic Football, a senior Gaelic football team doctor, and also Dr. Barry O'Driscoll, former International Rugby Board medical advisor. We are going to change the subject now from sport to tourism, but we're going to a place where they love their rugby.